couldn't start. I couldn't finish. I couldn't prioritize. I couldn't figure out the steps. I actually ended up getting a friend over to help me finish. And both of us, ADHDers, got completely lost in it. And that's what I realized. Most planners are made for neurotypical mums, or they're made for ADHDs. Apparently, you just can't seem to figure out where to start and what to do next. I have made a system for all the hot messes, from one hot mess to another hot mess. This is a system to lead the hot messes into December and Christmas. It's called the Festive Fuck It Plan, the ADHD Mum's Planning System for December. It has four short workbooks. It has zero guilt, no spreadsheets, just planning, prioritizing, and dividing into chewable chunks. And better yet, I'll do it with you. Come join me, ADHDmums.com.au. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have probably the most anticipated episode by myself and probably nobody else, which is we actually have a pediatrician on board. Hello and welcome to Dr. Tommy Tran.
Thanks, Jane. Thanks for having me along. Really looking forward to the conversation.
I know how difficult it is to get into a pediatrician and how busy you are. So firstly, just I really want to honour and respect the fact that you've taken the time to do the interview. I have been looking for somebody for over 2 years. I've emailed so many different people and I can completely understand why people don't want to come onto a podcast when everyone's time poor, but I just really want to acknowledge that you've done that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, and no, I'm very happy to be here. And I think if it's helpful for your listeners, that's really great. I think having information is probably the most empowering thing, like that kind of helps parents the most, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. And having correct information too from someone like yourself. So this episode is around ADHD medication for kids. I just wanted to start off with a really big question. And that is, why do so many parents say that stimulant meds don't work? Because I hear a lot of people that say they did work, they don't, then there was too much, there was a dosage. Like, what do you think is behind that?
I think when you think about kind of medication and not just ADHD medication, it's about working out what's the purpose of the medication and what are you actually trying to manage and what are you trying to treat. A lot of children, ADHD in isolation on its own is not very common. Often you'll have comorbidities and other kind of things that will be going on for the child, whether that's anxiety or learning problems, or if they have autism and social problems, there's a lot of things going on and kids aren't usually just presenting with ADHD. They're usually pretty complex. The important thing to know is that ADHD medication generally just works on the ADHD component. And so if ADHD contributes 50% to the difficulties, for example, then you're only really expecting a 50% improvement. Lots of kids who have other things happening and you're left with those kind of residual symptoms from other things that are going on in their life.
I'm so glad you said that because I talk about that a lot, but sometimes if I post about it online, I get a bit of kickback that, you know, no, only my child does only have ADHD or I only have ADHD. And actually, typically, I completely agree with you because a lot of people then in the Facebook group get medicated or they have their children on medication. And actually, that doesn't, air quoting, solve what they thought it was going to solve, because we just hope and wish that this medication will just fix everything, but it doesn't always happen.
Yeah, I think as the pediatrician, I think it's our job to explain that when we prescribe medication, it's about setting clear expectations on what potentially might happen when you start a trial of medication. And I generally focus on the core ADHD symptoms with hyperactivity or impulsivity or attention difficulties or executive functioning. And those are things that I'm expecting to improve. But if you have other things happening, if the kid's really anxious, then unless they're anxious because of their ADHD, then I wouldn't expect the medication to improve anxiety per se. So I think it's that conversation when you're looking at prescribing medication at the beginning, you've set some clear expectations on what's going to happen.
So then if we take that step further, if we do have a child that is on a stimulant medication for ADHD, do you then notice if they are autistic and they haven't been diagnosed or they haven't been assessed for it? Is there some things that happen if they do have a dual diagnosis that we weren't aware of yet?
Yeah, I mean, you will see that in some situations where it can be quite hard to assess for say, autism, for example, if the child's really hyperactive and impulsive, because there is some overlap in symptoms as well. In autism, you're looking for social communication difficulties, you're looking for interactive skills. If the child's too hyperactive to sit down and have an interaction with you, then it can be hard to work out, is that ADHD or is that autism? So sometimes when you manage the ADHD symptoms, the child's able to settle down and start looking at those interactive skills. And it can be a little bit easier to actually to work out if there is underlying autism, because you've removed that confounding variable of the unmanaged ADHD. So you do sometimes, I'll hear parents say that their autism kind of symptoms become more obvious once their ADHD is managed.
I have noticed that a lot of parents and mums tend to understand and want their child to be medicated for ADHD. But if they do have that anxiety or they're autistic or there's other things happening, sometimes a pediatrician can suggest an antidepressant, an SSRI, for example, to work alongside it. But I feel like that is a bit scary or taboo for parents. They're kind of like, oh, I don't want my child, they're only seven, on an antidepressant. How do you approach that conversation? Like, what are the benefits that maybe we're missing out on by not being open?
Yeah. I mean, when you're looking at medication, the way I look at it is I look at what do I think is at what kind of symptoms or which of the kind of conditions is having the biggest impact on the child in front of me. And so if it's ADHD, then I talk a lot about ADHD medication. If I think it's more anxiety or mood disorder, then I'll talk about anxiety and mood medication. It's about stratifying which is the having the biggest impact. I think a lot of parents, they worry about SSRIs, and obviously there is a black box warning about increasing really negative thoughts and self-harming thoughts, and that does cause anxiety in the parents typically, because that's a significant consequence related to that, and it can be a little bit scary. ADHD medication, I think you hear a lot of information about how well it works as well, and I think a lot of parents, and you get an instantaneous result as well. So you start and it works really well, really quickly. Antidepressants take a lot longer to taper up. So you got to be really patient. And I guess that kind of makes it a little bit harder to start as well from a doctor's point of view, because you have to be a bit more patient and wait, and there's not that instantaneous effect.
I was really fascinated about what you said before when you were talking about how hyperactivity, if you can't actually have a conversation with that child because they're so busy, it can be really difficult to pick up the whole picture. And I noticed, and again, I understand social media is a bit of a 50% hit rate in terms of accuracy at the moment, but I saw a reel and it was from a psychiatrist. And he said, in his personal opinion, he thought that ADHD had a couple of different representations. In his opinion, it wasn't research-based. And he said, I think there's like ADHD-led autistic and ADHD people, like where the ADHD is the primary one. You might not always notice autism initially. And then there's the autism kind of forward one, where you don't necessarily notice the ADHD until later. And then there's the one where they're 50-50. And I was just reflecting on that when you were talking, thinking if you are medicating ADHD and that's their primary one where they're so busy, for example, and then there's autism underneath, would you agree, again, just in personal opinion, that they do, people have that dual diagnosis, but they have different leading or dominant traits?
I think there'll be different severity levels as well. So they're both on a spectrum. You'll have severe kids with ADHD who are very, you know, hyperactive, very impulsive, but then more subtle and mild ASD kind of traits where you won't pick that up if they both go together. And then the opposite is true. You'll have some kids who are quite significantly on the autism spectrum, but then have some mild, say, inattentive symptoms rather than the hyperactive or impulsive kind of behaviors. And your inattentive ADHD is harder to pick up in itself because you're not demonstrating those symptoms quite easily with the busyness and the kids running around the room. They might be sitting quietly there and not in the typical ADHD fashion and just have a little bit of trouble with zoning out here and there. So there's different kind of presentations for autism and different presentations for ADHD and different severity levels for both of them. I think you have to treat each person individually. And sometimes, you know, that diagnostic process, you do it sequentially, you do it in a stepwise manner. And I take that top-down approach where I look at, well, what are the most obvious things here? I manage it. And then I look at the next issue. Yeah, I feel like this is a kind of a long-term relationship. It's not just a, I'm going to see you once and tell you everything that's going on. I think it's a bit of a journey together.
Oh, I think that's a great point. Yeah. Journey sounds way too peaceful. So one of the biggest pain points that ADHD mums talk about all the time, I get so many emails about it, and I just wish there was an answer, and that is the afternoon crash. So when we pick up a child from school and they have, let's say, for example, a stimulant on board, and then you pick them up and it all seems to happen at the same time. If the ADHD mum is on a stimulant, they can crash at the same time as the after-school pickup and all of the things. I was wondering, in those moments, so many women are talking about if they have the top up, their child won't sleep later. They're just dealing with so much. Is there any strategies that we can implement to minimize that fallout?
I think it's probably multifactorial in nature. And I think the wearing off medication certainly does impact with that timing. And the way I think about it is the kids who are busy and active, and you've just suppressed that with your medication through the day. They haven't had the opportunity to burn off all their energy. And then suddenly the handbrake comes off and the energy levels pick up. And it's like the analogy of an adult who needed to sit at their desk all day and not move. By the end of the day, you just get a bit restless and fidgety because you haven't been using up all your energy. I think the kids are very much the same. So I think it's important to choose the kind of right activity to do at the time. That might not be the best time to do homework, for example. You want to get them out running around using up all their energy. It's also confounded by the fact that you probably suppress their appetite during the day, and it's probably starting getting a little bit hangry at afternoon period as well. And then that end of the day also, if you think about your ADHD brain, you've been working hard all day. You've been doing schoolwork all day. There's going to be an element of cognitive fatigue there as well, getting towards the end of the day. So they're getting a bit more tired. You're getting all these kind of things happening with the child. They're getting a bit tired in the brain. It's the end of the day, they're running out of energy, they haven't eaten as much during the day, and then their medication's worn off. So I think it's important to maybe address all those little things. So making sure they're getting some regular meals through the day, making sure they're getting adequate sleep at night so they're not getting too fatigued, and just managing the workload as well through the day with some physical activity. So those are the things I talk about with parents when they're getting that afternoon crash.
Yeah, it's a great point, isn't it? And again, wouldn't it be great if there was a magic fix to that? But it's kind of like an ongoing management, isn't it? As much as we would love it not to be. One other thing that I hear ADHD mums post about in the Facebook group all the time, and by the way, the Facebook group doesn't give medical advice, but I think sometimes women are just desperate. They just want to share. So a lot of them will say, oh, we had such a great result for a while. I'm waiting to get into my ped now. We've got another month to go. It doesn't feel like that medication is working now. When you hear that, and as from a pediatrician point of view, what are the things that you unpack? Because there's all these questions that we get overwhelmed with as parents, like puberty, stress, anxiety. Like, how do you even know where to begin with it?
Yeah, I mean, you're right there. I think you have to look at what are all the other external factors happening for the child with sleep and nutrition and anxiety and peer group relationships and things like, is it exam period? What are the school and academic stresses like? I look at it like a efficacy medication on one end and demand on the other side. So what's the demand on the child? And is the child able to cope? And the medication's there just to help with their coping skills. You'll often see after they start medication, they do really well. And it's that instantaneous effect, which is great. And then things, yeah, they often do come down to a baseline once again. You start getting used to being better regulated. The ADHD medication seems to be working well. And then kind of reality kicks in and the expectations shift in terms of what the child should be able to do now that they can focus a bit better. So perhaps at that point, the expectations are a little bit more. And so then there ends up being a bit of a gap and you don't meet those expectations.
One of my best friends, her daughter is extremely hyperactive. She started the medication. She said to me she didn't think it was working that well, but because I only talk to her every couple of weeks, she lives interstate. When she's listing off things that have happened, I'm like, it does sound a lot better than what it was before, but I think she'd almost normalized and gotten what it had been like before, 3 months before. That's kind of what you're referring to, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Then there's a new norm for the child. True. It becomes a bit more normal now for them to be able to sit and focus. And then little things become a bit more obvious because, your expectations have changed.
What about it for the mums out there that have got those internalizing children, the one that you were saying, the child that's sitting there quietly who might be inattentive, Or you've only got, I would imagine, as a pediatrician, not a long time to spend with these children before trying to figure out what is the most important thing to do first, which would be very difficult, to be honest, I think. I was just wondering, for a parent that has a high masking child, where you're not necessarily going to see everything out in the office, what are some things that they can do to prepare for the assessment or the appointment that's helpful for a pediatrician?
Yeah, I mean, you're always looking for collateral information, and you get the impression of the child in the room, obviously, but you are relying on parents and caregivers and teachers in particular to give you that additional information. And that additional information there is to help you confirm your clinical suspicion. You're right, the child's only going to be in there in our room for an hour, and we got to gather a lot of information in that time. But the child's with the parents, yeah, for years and years and years, and teachers months at a time. So I generally rely more on that information than what I see in the room, because I'm in a very artificial situation, a consult room, one-on-one with the child who could have some anxiety. It's really hard to determine what's the norm for them. So all that collateral is probably more important. And so I don't think I ever make a diagnosis of ADHD until I've had all that collateral information available to see how they've gone. So yeah, we use questionnaires, we use report cards, we use allied health reports. So it's good to have all that information available for that appointment.
Yeah, that is a great point, having it done. I've seen a couple of mums recently in the Facebook group, and they said that they had been taking some videos of their child that they only witness at home. Not obviously for public disclosure on social media, but to show a pediatrician. Is that helpful?
I think the helpful information will be the child in their natural environment and what they do just typically. I think showing a video of someone having a meltdown or a child really upset, that's probably not as helpful, because a behavior is always for a reason. And the more important thing is to work out, well, what's the reason? Why have they become upset? Why have they had a meltdown? Why are they dysregulated? Is when I'm thinking about intervention and how to help, I want to stop it from happening. I don't want to get to the point where they're having a full-blown meltdown. So what are the preceding events there? Can you give me an explanation of why they're doing that? That's much more important to me. For example, they're having a meltdown because every time you're getting them to do a writing task, they get really upset and dysregulated. Well, then I'd want to know why they're having trouble with that writing task. Is it because they can't focus, because they can't sit still? Is it because they have a writing disorder? That kind of information is more important to me.
Okay, so like, for example, we had a really particularly challenging day, and these seem to be the things that point to this really challenging day. I don't know what it is, but it seems to be a recipe of these three things. Is that mm-hmm. more what you're looking at?
Exactly. So I want to know every time they do a certain subject at school, they have a meltdown, or every time it's really loud and noisy, they have a meltdown. Yeah, that information is a lot more helpful to target recommendations and medication, for example.
That's a good point. If you could speak to a lot of the parents, what do you wish every parent understood about the medication journey before they even got to the first appointment? What do you wish was the information that we had?
So if it's about medication, then I think coming with an open mind, and coming with questions or your concerns, because often they're very common. I think most parents have the same concerns about medication. And I think as to the medication, I think to work well also, I think the parents have to be on board, and I think the children have to be on board. I think there are times where everyone is like open-minded and willing to give it a try and think it's going to help. And there's probably a bit of a placebo effect there to an extent, that you find you get good results. So I think having questions, coming with an open mind, are probably the most helpful things.
What about something that always actually stressed me out for months before our first pediatrician appointment was I felt really confused because my children, when they first went, were like 8 and 7, let's say. I knew that a lot of the questions were going to be around their deficits and what they're not very good at, but it was really confusing because they have to be there to get the Medicare rebate. And you want to see them in person. I completely respect that. But then you're kind of having this conversation where you're desperate for help. You're so wound up with what you're hoping to get through with your information. A lot of us, obviously, neurodivergent ourselves. But then you have our heart and soul, the love of our life, our child there, that you're talking about in a bit of a negative light. And then the pediatrician is there and you're like, can you ask for the child to leave for parts of it? Or what are the options with that?
You can. It depends on the age, obviously. I think for the younger kids, I think that's fine. I'm happy for them to go and wait outside or do something else. I think for the older kids, the teenagers, you probably want to get them involved and you want them to be on board as well. And I think they're cognitively able to understand, one, their deficits, and then two, how things like medication might be able to help them. And often if they're motivated, then they're more, you need that buy-in that can, to improve compliance as well. So I think it's probably a bit age dependent. Certainly you don't want the younger kids talking about all the things that they can't do. But yeah, the older kids, I think they should probably be there. I mean, we do go with a strengths-based approach as well. We do like to know what the kids are good at. And a lot of this is about schooling, but not every child can be good at school, but they will likely have other skills. They might be really good at sports. They might be good with their hands, construction, building things. And when you're talking to the kids, you want to make sure that you're highlighting those things and how medication might even help them be even better at these things. I think it really depends on the age, yeah, as to whether they're involved or not. But I think your doctor should really be looking at that, the kind of strengths and things they're good at as well.
Pediatricians are really the experts at handling children and those tricky conversations. The fact that you guys are professionals, that you'd want the children to feel good about themselves. So I suppose there's a little bit of leadership on your end too. I remember worrying about it for 6 months and then I got there and then she had it all handled and I was like, I don't know why I thought I would be in charge of that part.
We do this day in, day out. So we try to really, yeah, focus on the good things as well for the kids.
Okay, what do you think some of the common mistakes are or miscommunications with how medications are discussed, whether it's online or in schools? What are some of the myths that you think, geez, I just wish people knew that wasn't true?
There's lots of different things. The most common one I get is getting addicted to medication. And I think that causes a lot of fear in some parents. And they think that once they start, they're not going to be able to come off medication or they're going to be stuck taking it forever. Then they'll be abusing drugs when they're older, for example. They're the common things I hear. And I think a lot of parents then get comfort in the fact that saying, well, it only works for as long as you take it. It only works on the day you take it. So the commitment is actually not there long term. And for a lot of parents, I think if you can say, look, you can just try it. If it works really well, awesome. But if it doesn't work, you stop it and you haven't lost anything. At least then you kind of will know whether it's the right thing for you and your child. That's probably the main concern I get from a lot of parents. I'm not sure what other concerns get typically happen.
I think that'd be the main one, that it's somehow going to be a gateway into some really hard drugs would probably be the ADHD myth I see most. Like, you give them a stimulant now, you know, they're going to be on cocaine by the time they're 12. And it's like, I don't think that any of that is true. I actually thought that ADHD medication reduce the chance of some of those addictions later on, actually.
Yeah. The RAIN study from Perth actually highlights that you probably reduce their risk of drug abuse when they're older, because I guess it's, you're giving them a script, it's a controlled situation, you're managing doses, and they're not there looking to self-medicate when they're older, because they know that, well, this medication worked when I was younger, maybe that's what I need.
Oh, perfect. What gives you hope when working with families navigating these things? What change do you see if they actually get good support medically and emotionally? Do you see any great stories to share, anything like that?
I mean, in terms of like ADHD and kind of intervention as a doctor, ADHD medication works better than most other treatments for all different types of medicine out there. The response rate's really great and it can be life-changing. A lot of kids and their families. And because it works so well, the response rate's so good, I get a lot of positive reinforcement and a lot of satisfaction. Okay. When you have a child who starts medication that works really well and life changing in lots of situations with families, that you get a really good, you go into medicine to help people and it's something that's really good and you really feel like you're helping them.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Especially when it can be such a roller coaster. I'm pretty sure I've hugged our pediatrician a couple of times because, you know, you go in there so desperate and they can give you some kind of answer and just it gives you that hope and that glimmer that it might be okay, which is so good because often you have to wait such a long time.
And
then you finally get there and if they can offer you a suggestion or something that would help, it's just so relieving. Like I've cried out of happiness there more than sadness. But look, thank you so much for your time. Have we missed anything that you'd like to share before I go?
Not really, but look, I've followed this journey along. So a lot of my patients now from early on, the 5 or 6 and ADHD and things not going well. And now they've finished school and they're young adults and just seeing the kind of trajectory over time and the kids growing up, being really successful in life and getting good trades and jobs and going into study and just seeing them grow and develop over 10, 12 years is really satisfying and a really great part of my job when I eventually have to say goodbye to them because they're adults now instead of children. I think it's a long journey, but definitely worthwhile, I think.
Oh, perfect. Look, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. I'm going to put in the show notes Dr. Tommy Tran's information and where he works. I know he's got a very long wait list, as everybody does, but I will leave it on there regardless. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
That's okay. You're very welcome. Thanks very much, Jane, for having me on.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD month shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au,